Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
All right, let's talk hedge funds. Of course, a hedge fund's job is to actually make money.
Yes, very much. And over the last 20 years, hedge funds have actively entered the activist arena. Activist hedge funds make a large enough investment in a company to be able to participate in the management and the firm's decision making.
Activist investors like to make investments in companies where management lacks the proper incentives to maximize shareholder value. For example, okay, this can mean, you know, like overpaying themselves, doing a bad job, or just missing opportunities.
And one of the best known activists to date is Carl Icahn, or funds such as Elliott Capital. Are you secretly masquerading?
No, I wish I was.
Bridgewater Associates and BlackRock.
Well, let's dive into this world and how COVID-19 has hit the industry. We're chatting with Quartz Capital Asia's head of research, Harvard Chi. Harvard, good morning. How are you?
Hi, guys. Morning to all. Hey, many thanks for having me. Your show, really appreciate it.
thanks a lot for taking the time. Certainly hope you're staying safe at home, yeah?
Yes. I think fortunately or unfortunately, so portfolio management and trading are classified as essential service. So we still have to go to the office, but, you know, we're running at around like 20%, less than 20% of the workforce, and, you know, keeping our social distance, you know. I mean, all for the country's effort to reduce the infection and also to flatten the curve, yeah.
Yeah, well, hear. Glad to hear you're doing the right thing. Not like all the hundreds of people who were fined over the weekend for not doing the right thing.
Well, we will learn. We're Singaporeans, we have a very strong adaptive capability, yeah.
Well, yes. You know, another type of entity that has a strong sort of capability to learn to this hedge fund. So let's talk about them. Quartz Capital is a $150 million activist hedge fund, and it's recorded an annualized 9% since starting in 2014. So how are things so far this year?
Sure. I think we can give a really short introduction of ourselves. So basically, Quartz Capital, we are Singapore asset manager, and we have a developed Asia focus. That is that we only focus on investing in places like Singapore, Hong Kong, and Australia, as well as a little bit of Japan. I think the main reason is because we think that, you know, this country is offer very good regulatory protection, transparency, and, you know, basically a very, very good rule of law, so that, you know, to actually help investors such as ourselves. And I think we run a much more, I think as what you mentioned earlier, so we run a much more concentrated portfolio of about 10 to 15 positions. And in most of this position, we are usually the substantial minority shareholders. And so we run an active value strategy. So what does this mean is that, so value means that we focus a lot on companies which has a net cash balance sheet. So they also have a very strong asset base. You know, they have properties which are easily valued. And they also have a very, very good, strong business which generate cash flow. And active means that once we invest in these companies, we take a very active approach in engaging with management, you know, finding ways to unlock value, such as, you know, increasing dividend, sale of the company, privatization, ways which can create value for all shareholders. So basically, that's in essence what we do here at Quartz Capital.
I understand, Harvard, that the usual modus operandi of activist investors is to take a significant stake in a poorly run company, and then after that, you lobby for changes in the hopes of unlocking value. Is this an accurate way to describe what you do? How different are you from other activist investors?
I think the unique thing about Asia is that, I mean, unlike in US and Europe, so most of the time where, you know, an activist investors come into a company in the US and Europe, most of the time the company is in distress, you know, they have a bit of a issue with management and they need to turn around the company. So the difference is that in Asia, most of the companies that we are involved in, you know, they always usually have a lot of cash because, you know, they're always very, very conservative. And then there's always a bit of assets which are hidden away. For example, they have a building from the 1970s or 1980s, which are still valued at cost price, and today is valued at, I mean, the real value is at 5-6 times, but of course, you know, they're very conservative, so they don't really revalue their assets. And usually they have quite a good running business. It's just that, I mean, the business has kind of like deteriorated, so they haven't really, you know, tried to professionalize it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that they can improve. But however, the good thing for us is that it's very asset-backed. So technically, you know, and there's also a strong cash flow. So we actually have a collect dividend while we actively work with management to improve the company here. Yeah.
So last year, you were active in the REIT space, writing at least two open letters, one pushing for Ascot REIT to acquire Ascendas Hospitality Trust, another pushing for ESR REIT to merge with Sabana REIT. How has this COVID-19 situation affected the way that you do business, especially when it's brought down interest rates and also valuations for many companies? And when you look at things so far this year and you compare it to previous years and other crises, what's your assessment?
Sure. I think probably just to give a bit of a summary as well. So last year was quite a good year. So we were up about 25% last year. And I think for this year, we are slightly less than about 10%. So, you know, I mean, compared against the market indices like the MSCI Asia and the FSSDI, which is down about 15-20%. So I think I can say that we have been like outperforming both indices by quite a strong margin. And I think one of the key reasons is that we kind of took a more scientific and data-driven approach to this COVID-19 situation. So, you know, I think which has led to us actually increasing our position during the last few weeks, which has kind of benefited us quite a bit. I mean, if I can give our views on this COVID-19 situation, so we think that there's been a lot of media hype and, you know, a lot of so-called experts coming up and commenting and saying that, like, yeah, the world will be in a lockdown until the end of the year. You know, we're going into a depression. Basically, we will never go back to the same again. So I think if it's okay with you, you know, if we can go to the facts of basically the details of the issue. So I think it's really, really tough. But technically, you know, we have to see that basically 95% of the COVID death has actually been people which are above the age of 60 and as well as having pre-existing health conditions. And I think that, you know, basically 20-25% of those infected will be hospitalized, 10% need ventilators. So as long as the hospital has enough capacity and enough PPE to handle it, so this can be a sufferable situation. And I think the good thing is also that, you know, we are already so far into this crisis already. So we've seen a lot of successful stories such as China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, South Korea, when, you know, they have been able to successfully fight COVID. So, you know, technically, it's becoming more and more like an open book test for a lot of countries that look at what they do, copy it. And basically, the idea is the same, you know, testing, quarantining, isolation, you know, masking, face shield, social distancing. And I think also every day, the testing, the speed and the quantity is improving every day. We have a lot of interesting therapeutics which are coming out, such as convalescence plasma, you know, the antibodies from Regeneron, the plasma treatment from Takeda. So, you know, we get a lot of all this data on for the next 2 to 3 weeks. And I think that what the world has also done is that basically a lot of part of the world has been a lockdown for the last month already. So we have basically been trying to squeeze the R naught to less than one, which means that one person infect less than one person,
right,
which really cause the infection to come down. So I think basically, you know, if you build all these parts together, you can actually see that, you know, basically there is a light at the end of the
yeah.
I mean, you know, okay, it's
yeah.
bad and everything.
Well, look, let me jump in there, only because we want to make sure that we also talk to you about, you know, what you do in a scenario like this.
Correct.
So what I want to know is, given everything you've just said, you know, you still have to go on with business. And talking about that, how do you identify suitable targets? And then where do you get your ideas about what you do next?
Correct. So basically, during this kind of situation, I think this is a kind of abnormal situation as well. So I think one of the criteria that we always make sure when we invest in this kind of situation is that the company that we invest in definitely has the net cash position and as well as the cash flow to survive for this 1 to 2 years without the need to go for any capital raising. And I think the second criteria which we kind of set for this situation is basically that we try to only focus on companies which we believe can survive or can resume business in the new normal. So what do we mean by the new normal? So new normal means that, you know, it can survive social distancing, it can survive, you know, life without a vaccine. And I think those sectors that we think that might have a bit of issues, such as airlines, such as retail REITs, such as restaurants or something. So we tend to dine in restaurants. So we tend to be a bit less focused on this because we think that, you know, these companies in this sector probably need a little bit of time to kind of rework their operations until we find kind of vaccine. So I think if we can go to REITs, so I think the first tier REITs have actually done really, really well during the last few weeks. So yes, actually been a very, we've actually benefited a nice rebound. And actually now we have actually rotated more to the second tier REITs. You know, with some financials, you know, for example, Sabana, ESR REITs. So, you know, they are still down about 30-40% from the pre-COVID high. I think if we can go to one of the reasons why these REITs are actually down a lot. I think one of the reasons is basically because besides market risk aversion, so these REITs were actually hit by margin calls, you know, by on high net worth and ultra high net worth investors. So, I mean, you know, we also have it as well because we're also private banking clients for our fund from a lot of these major banks. So, you know, long time ago, they were actually happy to lend you 50, 70% LTV, you know, to kind of juice up your dividend yield in this position to 10%, 12%, but you know, during this market correction, they reduce LTV, which kind of result with a lot of forced selling, and then which causes even more margin calls, and you know, it's just the whole situation just result in a whole discriminant, you know, selling. And I think in Business Times they have also written a little bit about this as well. I mean, a few BNS having been forced sold their position. So, I mean, what we think is that a lot of the forced selling has actually been cleared. So we have basically taken the opportunity to accumulate in this position during the last few weeks. Yeah.
We've been speaking with Harvard Chee, Head of Research at Quartz Capital Asia. Harvard, thanks for your time. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you very much.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.